Yeah, well, there's been so many inspiring struggles and campaigns that have been speaking tonight. And I was just thinking, you know, if you look around at the world today, you can see that there's a battle for ideas going on, I think. There's a battle for how we can explain the events in the world around us, how we can explain capitalism. And in a period where capitalism is in crisis, you know, Sally outlined it very, very well, the growing inequality, the war, the refugee crisis, the climate change, austerity, that battle for ideas is one that I think is intensifying. And you have a situation where we have, you know, rising food banks, crisis to the NHS, crisis to housing, you know, an attempt to blame refugees and migrants for that crisis. You see, I think, the tiny minority who actually benefit from this system really battling hard for their ideas to win out. So, you know, they want to tell us that there's a deserving and undeserving poor. They want to demonise the unemployed. They want to demonise the disabled and work up racism to divide us. And they're really trying to foster, I think, an idea inside the working class that really, like, we're all to blame for our own poverty. You know, people are just lazy. The idea that people are right, people need to stop complaining and get on with it. And actually, you know, that's a constant battle against those ideas. But those ideas don't always win out. And I think, you know, I was listening to James speaking earlier on, and I think you look at something like the junior doctors dispute, where they threw everything they really could at you guys. You know, the demonisation, the lies, the tactics that they use to work up against those strikes. And you look at the last strike, you know, first full walkout, whatever, or in a long time anyway, of junior doctors. And not only was there a majority of support behind that strike because people saw you guys fighting to defend the NHS, but it was actually an increase in the amount of people that supported that strike from a few months ago. So I just think the picture that you painted of the Tories really being on the back foot over that question, and the junior doctors actually being in a very, very strong position, is one that's absolutely true. And it's so much about that dispute, it's so much about the NHS, but it's about everything really. That's when you have to go massive consequences. So I hope that, you know, you guys do fight for a better contract and that we all support you to do that. What I think is really exciting, I think, about right now, the current moment that we're in, is that in this kind of global crisis that we're seeing, we talk about how terrible it is and what they're trying to do to us, but actually across the world you can see the idea of socialism becoming popularised in such a huge way. You know, Bernie Sanders in America, the fact that we've, you know, got a revolutionary socialist elected sitting on the panel with us tonight, Podemos, Syriza and Greece, and of course Jeremy Corbyn's election for leadership of the Labour Party. And I think, you know, what a fantastic thing that people like Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell are in the leadership of the Labour Party. And, you know, we're obviously not in the Labour Party here tonight, but what a fantastic thing that they're there. These are the two Labour MPs that have been the most consistent. You know, I remember standing at 5 o'clock in the morning with John McDonnell and the electricians dispute when they were fighting against the 35% pay cut, which they won. I was with John McDonnell on Saturday talking about fighting, and Gareth talking about fighting for £10 an hour, minimum wage, marching on Top Shop to defend cleaners. You know, these are people who have been stalwarts of the movement, who have been seen as the kind of laughable lefties by the parliamentary party for a long time. And so to see Corbyn's election is something that I think every socialist should be celebrating, because it reflected that huge move, I think, for an alternative to austerity, to stand in solidarity with refugees, to get rid of pride and support the junior doctors, and all the things really that we're talking about tonight. And it's a moment that gave hope to millions of working class people. And so in the SWP, we want to and do work with Jeremy Corbyn, we work with John McDonnell, and there's been many, many people who have joined the Labour Party off the back of that hope and that sense for an alternative. But, you know, I suppose there's a question really, because here we are having a rally about why you should get involved in the SWP and not join the Labour Party really. And, you know, Sally outlined, I thought, very well at the beginning about the ravages of capitalism are something that's systematic. You know, from Fortress Europe, stuff that Maxine's talking about, climate change, the Panama Papers scandal, the brutal austerity that's hammering working class people while that's happening. These are all problems that stem from the fact that this is a system that's based on generating profit for a tiny minority based on the exploitation of the majority of us. And so I think that John McDonnell and me agree on that, and I think that we want to fight together to change that. But the question really is, you know, how do things really change? How do you get that change? And I think if you look both historically and recently, there's some quite clear examples of where power really lies in capitalism. So we've talked a little bit about Syriza and Greece, a party that's elected on this clear anti-austerity basis on the back of a huge movement on the streets, repeated general strikes that have lost count of the number of how many have actually been in the last few years. And if that wasn't mandate enough, you then had this referendum on the question of austerity. So, you know, if that wasn't enough to stand up against the IMF, it would be very, very clear mandate. And yet what you've got now, in the last couple of weeks, the party at the far left voting through huge cuts, pensions cuts, demanded by the EU and the IMF. and then actually have a moment where you send the police into the Sintagma Square that protested as the vote was going through, and to have protesters tear gas out of the square. You know, this is actually quite a symbolic moment in lots of ways, because this was a government that one of the first things they did when they were elected was to remove those barriers, to say that this was about, you know, this was, we need the men off the back of protesting, and that's what we represent. And so you've got to ask why and how did that happen, and, you know, like somebody said earlier on, I don't think that it's because of some individuals that have turned bad or been corrupted or this kind of thing. I think these are people that did go in with the sense that they wanted to change things for the better. It's more, I think, a mark of that kind of vice pressure that people in that situation come under when you've got the full weight of these institutions. You know, did the IMF or the EU give a shit really about that huge democratic mandate to oppose austerity? Of course they didn't. And so what it exposes is the reality that political power doesn't really lie in parliaments at all under capitalism. It lies in these unelected institutions of profit that are going to fight and impose their will regardless of what democracy says. You don't just have to look at that example, you can look at the very poignant historic example of what happened in Chile, where, you know, the experiment of socialism in Parliament was brought to quite an abrupt and brutal halt in 1973, and you saw, you know, something like 30,000 people killed in the process of overturning the popular government on a much, much less dramatic scale. I think that same dynamic is something you can see in the challenges that the Corbyn's facing today, particularly when sections of his own shadow cabinet, his own MPs have a knife out of his back, so they don't ascribe to his view of what he wants the Labour Party to be, that I think many of us would share, really. But, you know, you look at the moment where he comes out to talk about Trident and opposing Trident and what he wants to do with the question of Trident, and suddenly you have these unnamed army officials appearing in the bloody television telling us actually that's not going to happen at all, we're going to let it. Who are you? What right do you have to do that? But I think it exposes that thing about this is not really where power lies in the Parliament. But of course it's important, you know, it makes a difference who's in office. I want to see Corbyn elected. Whether we end up with Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn, I think makes a big difference. Whether Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump becomes the US president, I think makes a huge difference to working class people's lives and the trade that we want to get as socialists. But rather than focusing our energies, I think, on building and joining the Labour Party, we need to be focusing our efforts on building the movement on the streets and the workplaces, through the strikes, through the demonstrations. We need to be on the streets together, because that is actually where the real ability to challenge, you know, these unelected institutions and forces of capital that want to crush us really and squeeze more and more out of us. That's where that power lies. And, you know, you look at it and think, well, even if there's an election tomorrow, which, you know, the state of crisis, the Tories are in, what happens in the US referendum, I don't think it's that wild an idea in some ways. But even if there was an election tomorrow, and Corbyn was in office, he was saying he was going to move and take on the banks and the rich and the warmongers and take on Trident and everything else, I think that we very quickly see, you know, Corbyn up against the same problems, the same tensions that the government in right now. And in a situation like that, you take the path of any compromise at all, really, with that sense that you've got to hold together a party or hold together a system that you're going to even bring change through the Parliament. You will get crushed by those forces, and that's kind of what we're seeing, I think, in Syriza, where they've just been swept into that position. So you can listen to all that and think, oh, bloody hell, what's the sense of, you know, the bankers and rich have got all the power, the military, what can we actually do? But I think the thing is that they don't really have all the power. You know, as Sally went through at the beginning, the capitalist system has a deep contradiction at the heart of it. So, hugely dynamic system that when it emerged, you know, tearing peasants off the land, concentrating them into big workplaces, big cities, actually for the first time, I see it created the potential for a fight for social society. It created its own gravedigger, as Marx said, where, you know, the working class who produce all the profits that the system relies on, who produce everything that we do and need in society, and are in collective situations together where they can organise. And so that's why I think strikes are so important for us as socialists. It was fantastic to listen to the Baker's Union guys and the junior doctors, and, you know, I know there was other strikes that were on the ship today as well. These are really, really important for us, but not just to win the concessions and hope that you go through win your disputes, but also because, you know, fundamentally strikes serve to work with a sense of collective power, like you said, when you saw the trucks, you know, driving away, you realise actually we have power here, and there's loads and loads of scripts that I could talk about. I don't have a lot of time. I just wanted to mention one which is probably not that necessarily well known, but in 2013 in Brighton, there was a long running dispute in the bins. Bin workers went on strike. They went on strike for like 3 weeks. I was out there quite regularly for it. And what you saw was, it started off not very confident. Oh, you know, who are we? What are we doing? We don't have power. But as the more I've gone up the picket line, they could see, actually smell, like their power on the streets of Brighton. The place was absolutely stinking. It was, you know, in the heat of the day, all these tourists and Londoners coming to have a nice time, and obviously it's a Green Council there, where you've got Caroline Lucas as the MP turning up on the picket line to support an attack, people fighting an attack our council's putting in. You know, that was, and you could see how the workers just started to feel really puffed up and think, actually, they need us, they really need us. The other thing Sally meant to talk about was inside people's precariat and the changes taking place inside the working class. That means that we don't really have power anymore, we're not organised, we're not all car workers and big factories anymore and everything else. Look at the US basket strikes that myself and Gary have both managed to be lucky enough to go and take part in. An incredible strike movement, you know, lowest paid workers that you could describe as probably one of the most downtrodden groups. Total lack of respect, total, you know, treated with no dignity at all. Work, how they rose up, you know, very serious to begin with, actually. They spoke to some of them about the first moments when they came out on strike and how terrified they were, thinking it would be just them. And then talking about how their confidence just went. Somebody else talked about the Egyptian revolution earlier, people losing their fear. That's the language that these workers used as well. And they also used the language of saying this is our civil rights movement. 90% of plastic workers in America are black. They're very much part of the Black Lives Matter movement. And so this incredible movement, you know, strikes hitting groups, cities, filling in whole layers of other low-wage workers and seeing, you know, imagine strikes in McDonald's and people in the city in the US. That's going to cost quite a lot of money for the profits of McDonald's, and they're starting to win real victories. So, you know, people mentioned France, you know, the conditions of daily exploitation, the experience of oppression comes from capitalism's need to divide us and to work up racism and sexism and homophobia and transphobia. Those conditions, they do produce sparks of resistance. People reach a point and they do fight, and we see those struggles all the time. And if you look at, you know, any historical change that we've ever got, and that, you know, somebody should tell TVC stands so greatly at this point, that's come from people, that's come from movements from below. The EU didn't get kind of people's opinion. That came from strikes and people fighting back. You know, the civil rights movement, the anti-apartheid movement, you know, women winning the vote, all these things came from people coming together collectively from the bottom up, organising and fighting back. And if you look at the scoresheet of all those battles, while huge gains have been made, you know, there's an unfinished business in every single one of them, really, and all these struggles. We still live in a racist society, as we can see, we still face sexism, we still are facing this neoliberal agenda to turn around all the gains that the workers' movement has made. You know, they're taking away Saturdays from lots of people, actually, because of the unsocial hours pact that they want to roll out. And, you know, the ruling class would benefit from the system. They would fight to defend their privilege. That's what you saw in Chile when they went in this law, probably. And that's what we saw, I don't know if you remember, in 2012, Marikana miners, you know, dispute in South Africa, where 30 were shot dead for being on a picket line. Don't need to go back to the 1930s in America to see what the state will do when it feels under threat. And you look at this as a huge contradiction. Workers living in absolute poverty and you know, working around those mines, producing platinum, you know, a hugely profitable commodity. And you saw really that shuddering glimpse of what lengths they would go to because of how important workers are, because they do that with the people's threat. And so, yeah, it's inevitable, I think, that people will always fight back and see that every day and see these violent struggles taking place. But it's not inevitable that that's going to translate into a social revolution that people will actually manage to transform society. And I think that will take conscious, organised political argument through the course of the struggles. Because having that potential power alone is, you know, to the nuclear revolution, as Alan talked about in the question of the Russian revolution, this is not enough. We have to fight for that idea of solidarity in people's heads, that we have power, that we can support each other in the way that everybody in this room has talked about tonight, and that actually is the kind of idea that can switch somebody from a point of being terrified, isolated, alienated, through. There's no alternative for the weight of all those ideas that have sort of thrown at us to divide us. So then switching to that, to actually fighting and feeling like that we've got a chance that we can win and we have power. And so that current of thinking really of what Social Workers Party is trying to nurture and trying to develop inside every struggle we want to go to the kind of races and then when we want to take it to the doctor's right there, we want to make sure that we link all the struggles that are going on to foster that idea that we can fight and that we can win. And you know, I suppose because workers collectively do everything in society, because together working has the potential to bring society to halt in that way and actually reorganise it fundamentally, we believe that it's not just, you know, it's not just possible to get rid of capitalism, it's actually really, really necessary when you look at the attacks that people are facing. So I think if you want to be part fighting for that vision, then you should join us next. You're not a member, you should get involved. You know, we'll be throwing ourselves into building. See, we'll be building the convoy to Cali, we'll be building Stand Up to Racism, we'll be trying to fight to build the broadest solidarity possible for all the disputes that are taking place between the doctors. Out again, we'll be there fighting in every workplace that we can get our hands on to take in collections, posters and support you guys and get a ticket lens. And, you know, we'll be working alongside Corbyn and anyone in the Labour Party that have hope for that alternative. But we'll also be raising the argument along the way, putting our vision of the possibility of socialism and organising towards that goal. Because, you know, the IMF, EU, the bosses, tucking away their riches in Panama, lying over the, you know, cover-ups that we've seen at Hillsborough and Orkney and so many other injustices, they're organised. And Marx talks about it as a band of warring brothers. They're at war over the competition for, you know, for the profits. But whenever they feel that they're in another jet, bands together and try and stop that challenge winning. So you see the example of the Russian Revolution, that did happen in history. They tried to hide it from us. All these wonderful stories of people fighting back, they tried to hide it from us. And we want to tell people those stories. People should go to the books all at that, people should read, people should find out about the struggles. But the question always comes, you know, people will fight back. Is our side organised well enough? Are we prepared for that? Struggles? And, you know, seizing those moments when you appear, and I think that's what being the Social Workers Party is about. And I wanted to kind of finish up really with a quote, which is from American Marxist, which I think is a good advert for why you should join Social Workers Party and get involved in fighting for that kind of vision of socialism. And he says, "Nothing can be guaranteed, of course, except the honour and dignity of fighting for a new and better world, rather than the violence of adapting one's mind and heart to a vile one. We guarantee to no one that the working class is predestined to behave according to our blueprints, even if we sit by in interested passivity to see whether it carries out our mission. We offer only a road of struggle and a choice of allies in the only war of fighting in the battle for socialism against the rival world blocks of war and exploitation." And so, you know, we can't guarantee that we're going to have a revolution and it's inevitable that we're all going to, it's going to be fantastic, but what we can guarantee in the next WP we won't be passively standing by. We'll be in the struggle fighting. We'll be trying to turn that huge potential that exists in the system, that vision for a better social world, into a reality. And so we want you to get involved in that fight.